Brother John is sick and not able to be here and has asked me to take the lesson tonight. Thought we'd study somewhat in the book of Isaiah. Isaiah, the first chapter, he starts out by calling this a vision. And of course, anyone who studied the book of Isaiah knows that it is very, very difficult to understand what he's saying, because many times he uses parables and figurative language, and most of the time it's very, very difficult to find out what time period that he's talking about. This is what makes it very hard for us to understand the book of Isaiah. And so when he talks about the vision now, this is not necessarily just plain words. And he says, the vision of Isaiah the son of Amoz, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, kings of Judah. So here are four kings now. Three of them were following the law of God, even if Uzza didn't turn out in the end the right way, and maybe Jotham. Nevertheless, we'll see during their time, they actually themselves were walking according to the law. And, of course, Hezekiah was one of the best kings. So Isaiah had a very good situation as far as the rulers are concerned, the kings. But in this time is about 808 B.C. when Uzza was beginning, and he Hezekiah died about 705, which is about an 80-year period. So how long did Isaiah prophesy? Well, it looks like he started to prophesy toward the end of Uzziah's reign, and that would be somewhere around 756 B.C. So during this time, we notice that Isaiah lived during the time when Israel was taken away and destroyed as a nation. So 722, the king of Assyria came and scattered the Israelites all over the north, and the Lord never did bring them back, at least not as a nation of Israel. So we're looking now at Isaiah 6 and verse 1. We get a line on when this prophecy is taking place. Isaiah 6 and verse 1. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. So here's a vision again. And so this is in the year that the King Uzziah died. This is 756 then. So 756 to 722 is how many years? So it's not many years after Isaiah began to prophesy that Israel was taken away and destroyed. And so we're getting a line here on chapter 6. So that tells us then that chapters 1 through 5 are probably during the time of Uzziah. And the Lord tells us about this King Uzziah. Just in notation, what's the difference between a vision and a dream in the New Testament? A vision and a dream are essentially the same. The only difference is, that's not me, by the way. The only difference is that a dream takes place in one's head. Nobody else sees it. Whereas the visions were open till other people could see. And so here he has a vision. Well, sometimes a dream is called a vision, so you have to actually see the situation in order to know if it's actually a dream or a vision where others can see it. So Daniel, the 7th chapter, verse 1, Daniel had both visions and dreams. Daniel 7, 1, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. So obviously he's in on his bed, and he has a vision of his head. So who else saw it? Nobody else saw it. Daniel did. All right, in Daniel, the 10th chapter, verse 1, he has a vision. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a thing was revealed unto Daniel, whose name was called Belshazzar, and the thing was true, but the time appointed was long, and he understood the thing and had understanding of the vision. All right, is this actually a vision or a dream? Well, let's look in verse 7. And I, Daniel, alone saw the vision. That sounds like a dream. For the men that were with me saw not the vision, but a great quaking fell upon them, so that they fled to hide themselves. So that wasn't a dream. That was a vision in our language. All right, in Acts, the 22nd chapter, verses 6 through 9, Acts 22, 6 to 9, Jesus appeared to Paul in the air, and it's called a vision. And it came to pass that as I made my journey and was come nigh unto Damascus about noon, suddenly there shone from heaven a great light round about me. And I fell unto the ground and heard a voice saying unto me, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? And I answered, Who art thou, Lord? And he said unto me, I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom you persecute. And they said, They that were with me saw indeed the light and were afraid, but they heard not the voice of him that spake to me. So this was definitely a vision that Paul saw, a reality where Jesus is appearing in the sky. All right, so we look back in Isaiah 1, verse 1. The vision of Isaiah the son of Amoz, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. But he also has prophecy concerning the church many times. Well, that's located or began in Jerusalem, and it's spiritual Judah, spiritual Israel. So truly his vision was Judah and Jerusalem. In 2 Kings 15, verse 1, we find what kind of king that Uzzah was. In the 27th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, began Azariah, that's Uzzah, the son of Amaziah, king of Judah, to reign. 16 years old he was when he began to reign, and he reigned 52 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Jeconiah. Of Jerusalem, and he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father Amaziah had done, save that the high places were not removed. The people sacrificed and burned incense still on the high places. So we notice in verse 3, he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father Amaziah had done. So as far as their outward actions are concerned, these kings were following the law or doing what was right in the sight of the Lord. And that's, of course, his God's judgment. So in verse 5, and the Lord smote the king so that he was a leper unto his death and dwelt in a several house. And Jotham, the king's son, was over the house judging the people of the land. All right, so at least until the end of his life when he made his mistake, he was following the law of God. 2 Chronicles 26, we see more concerning this king. 2 Chronicles 26, verse 15. And he made in Jerusalem engines invented by cunning men to be on the towers and upon the bulwarks to shoot arrows and great stones withal. And his name was spread far abroad, for he was marvelously helped till he was strong. So God was with him. But when he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction. So pride got this king. And it's amazing that he could follow the law of Moses, but nevertheless fall to this pride and being proud. So what does it tell us then about our situation if we are blessed and if the world begins to praise us? We could easily fall to pride just like they did. So we need to be concerned about what God thinks and not what men think. And so he transgressed against the Lord his God, went into the temple of the Lord to burn incense upon the altar of incense. So Hezekiah also bowed to men's praise, and he was caught, but he was a very righteous king. So what does it tell us then if we're very righteous like Hezekiah, and then suddenly we get a lot of the praise of men? We need to be careful of that and make sure that we don't take men's praise. Men's praise is all temporary, and unfortunately it's very fickle. It can come and go in hours or days or even minutes. So 2 Kings 15, verse 34, two kings Isaiah first worked with followed the law of Moses. In the second year of Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, began Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of Judah, to reign. 25 years old was he when he began to reign, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Jerusha, the daughter of Zadok. Now, that's not the high priest, by the way. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord. He did according to all that his father Uzziah had done. Now, the end of his life, I can't recall right now, but nevertheless, as far as the law of Moses is concerned, he was following the law of Moses, at least on the outer man. So thus the kings followed God's covenant, but now notice what the people were doing. So just having a righteous judge doesn't mean that the people are righteous. And this is a very strange description of the nation of Israel, but nevertheless, it's a fact. This is what Isaiah had to work with. Isaiah 1, verse 2. Hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth, for the Lord has spoken. I have nourished and brought up children, and they have rebelled against me. The Lord describes the Israelites as being rebels, rebelling against their Creator. So God is Creator, and he says in Proverbs 16, he's made all things for himself. So what happens then when men turn against their Creator? Are they humble or are they proud? In verse 5, Proverbs 16, verse 4, the Lord hath made all things for himself, yea, even the wicked for the day of evil. So if men use this world for themselves, and God has made this world for himself, who's right? Well, men are not right. And when men rebel against God, their Creator and owner, just like Israel did, they're proud. So then he mentions this in verse 5. Everyone that is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Though hand join in hand, he shall not be unpunished. So pride turns us against the Creator to say, this is my world, this is my thing. And the question is, who gave it to us? Well, we can't keep it forever, so is it a gift or is it a loan? At the very most, it's a loan. And if something's a loan, does it really belong to us? And of course, the answer is no. We belong to the owner, the Creator. So he tells us then in Isaiah, the first chapter, verse 3, he mentions this being an owner. He says, the ox knows his owner and the ass his master's crib, but Israel does not know. My people does not consider. So why bring in the ox here? Well, because the ox knows that he has an owner. He knows that he's there for the owner's sake. The owner is not there for his sake. But what do men think today? This is my world, this is my place, this is my life, my body, my. And they don't consider, just like Israel here. Israel's not considering. They have an owner, but they're living as though they have no owner, like they are the owner. Well, where did they get it, and how long could they keep it? But nevertheless, his people did not consider. How many today consider that they are owned? And who makes the rules for what you own? And who makes the rules for what others own? And when they actually own it, they make the rules. God is the creator, he's the owner. Who makes the rules? And if we don't listen to the rules, what are we doing? We're rebelling against the creator, the owner, just like Israel. He's going to go on to describe Israel here. Let's turn to Psalms 53, verses 2 and 3. Psalms 53, verse 2 and 3. This is why God repented that he had made the world. Isaiah 53, verse 2. God looks down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there are any that did understand, that did seek God. Now, who understands? Well, Israel didn't. They didn't seek God. And why would a man seek God? Unless he wants to find the rules that he needs to live by because he's in somebody else's place. So every one of them has gone back. They're all together become filthy. There's none that does good. No, not one. And in the flood, how many did good? They all turned according to their imagination. And what does the world do as far as God is concerned here? The denominational world has many good things to say about God, and they seek God regularly. But we'll find these Israelites did the very same thing. And yet God rejected the Israelites. Well, is he accepting Christians today? Well, let's see. So the owner then is respected for man and man's possession. So God created the world for himself. Psalms 100, verse 3. He's created all living things. Psalms 100, verse 3. Know ye that the Lord, he is God. It is he that made us, and not we ourselves. What's the result? We are his. And he calls us people in sheep here, but what are we? We are his. So we belong to him. So are we here, or is he here for our sake, or are we here for his sake? He has us here for his purpose. And if we reject his purpose, we're just like Israel. We're rebelling against his authority. So is that what we want to do? Well, let's continue to read in Isaiah 1, verse 4. The Lord describes Israel further. They've rebelled in verse 3. A sinful nation. Why are they sinful? Well, they rebel against the Creator. Is that righteous or sinful? A sinful nation, not just individuals. A people laden with iniquity. A seed of evildoers. Children that are corruptors. Why? They have forsaken the Lord. Well, they had been with the Lord, but now they have forsaken him. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel to anger. They've gone away backward. So they've rebelled. They're not listening to the owner. They're doing what they want to do. And so they have forsaken the Lord. They provoked the Holy One of Israel to anger. Well, question. If God has made me for his purpose and I don't pay attention to his purpose, is he happy? Is he pleased with me? How can he be? And so when men use God for their purpose and not for God's purpose, and their prayers are for things that they want, and they want God to help them in their work, is that the right way we should be? Or should we be helping the owner in his work? Well, Isaiah 53, verses 5 and 6, he continues to describe Israel. And this is what Isaiah has to work with, Isaiah 53, verse 5. But he was wounded for our transgressions, talking about Christ. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way, and the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. So what was the problem? Men turn to their own way. Men decide what they want in life. They decide how they're going to be happy. They decide how they're going to run their affairs, and they don't consider that God has made this world for himself. So Isaiah 58, we read more about this. What is the owner's response to rejecting or usurping his authority? Isaiah 58, 1, cry aloud, spare not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgression and the house of Jacob their sins. How is Israel different from the rest of the world? God is sending his prophets specifically to the nation of Israel, many of them, to tell them their sin, to tell them they're turning away from the owner. Now, he did have Balaam and several others who were with the Gentiles telling them the same thing, but he favored Abraham's seed. And so he sent many prophets to encourage them to turn to him. So he's dealing with them as children, and he's chastening them in different ways. So here is Israel as Isaiah works with them. If we saw this, what would we say? Isaiah 58, 1. Cry aloud, spare not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet, show my people their transgression and the house of Jacob their sins. What are they doing? Yet they seek me daily. Is that wrong? They seek me daily and delight to know my ways. They're like a nation that did righteousness and forsook not the ordinance of their God. So what are they doing? They're approaching God. They seek him every single day. They delight to know God's ways. They want to know the truth. But they're not a nation that did righteousness. What does that say? They want to know, but they won't do. So they take, they ask of me the ordinance of justice. They take delight in approaching God. They're fasting in verse 3. Why have we fasted? Say they, and you see not. Wherefore have we afflicted our soul, and thou takest no knowledge? Behold, in the day of your fast, God answers, you find pleasure and exact all your labors. So you're fasting, yes, but you're also enjoying yourself. Isaiah 58, verse 6 and 7. God's work is to form hearts that delight to fulfill the needs of others and to please the Creator. Here's what he says in Isaiah 58, verse 6. Is this not the fast that I have chosen? All right, here's God's fast. We saw that they were not eating and so on, maybe not drinking. That's man's fast. But here's God's fast. Loose the bands of wickedness. Undo heavy burdens. Let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke. Now this has to do with those that they've hired or that belong to them. And he says, if you'll have my fast, you'll loose the bands of wickedness, you'll undo heavy burdens, you'll let the oppressed go free, and that they'll break every yoke. Then he goes on to say, here's my fast. Is it not to deal thy bread to the hungry, and that thou bring the poor that are cast out to thy house, when thou seest the naked, that thou cover him, and that thou hide not thyself from thine own flesh? Well, of course, if their own flesh is poor, then they're liable to take some of their goods by helping them, and they were hiding themselves from their own relatives. Why? They were covetous. They didn't want to give. They didn't want to help these other people. So that's not God's way. God's way is to help those that are poor and look after other people's needs. Isaiah 58, verse 8, the two major ways men spend their time. Then shall thy light break forth as the morning, and thy health shall spring forth speedily, and thy righteousness shall go before thee, helping others. And the glory of the Lord shall be thy reward. Looking after from the back. And if you draw out I'm missing part of this in my notes here. Then shalt thou call, and the Lord shall answer. Thou shalt cry, and he shall say, here I am. If you take away from the midst of you the yoke, putting forth of the finger, and speaking vanity, and lift up your voice to the hungry, satisfy the afflicted soul. Then shall thy light rise in obscurity, and the darkness at thee as the noonday. So God's fast is helping other people. And, of course, in God's church, especially helping their brethren, the ones who are in need. And then not putting forth your finger. Putting forth the finger, what do? When we do that? When we point at somebody, we're not going to tell them something good. We're going to say something evil. We don't need to accuse anybody. And speaking vanity, what's vanity? Vanity, as far as God's concerned, is anything that doesn't work with him and his purpose. He works all things according to his purpose, Ephesians 1, 9, and 12. Well, if he's working everything according to his purpose, and I'm doing something else, what is it? It's a vanity. It's not going to last. So Isaiah 56, verse 11, he continues to describe Israel. Yea, they are greedy dogs which can never have enough. I think we know some like that. And they are shepherds that cannot understand. Why? They all look to their own way, everyone for his gain from his quarter. So everybody's looking after himself. And what do we find today? If we find somebody different, he is different. Isaiah 58, verse 13. Are we in fellowship with God in his work when we do the following things? He says, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day. So what were they doing? They call it a holy day. They sought the Lord. They came to ask of him the paths of judgment. They wanted to know the laws of God. The problem was they were doing their pleasure on God's holy day. And you call then the Sabbath a delight, to do God's will, the holy of the Lord, honorable, and shall honor him. How? Not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words. Well, whose words should we speak then? Whose pleasure should we seek? If this is God's day, who should we use it for? Well, he's the owner. We should use every day for him. Isaiah 58, verse 14. Then shalt thou delight thyself in the Lord, and I will cause thee to ride upon the high places of the earth, and feed thee with the heritage, inheritance of Jacob thy father, for the Lord, mouth of the Lord hath spoken it. So God gave Israel the law of Moses to fulfill his promise to Abraham, but they're not doing it. So back in Isaiah chapter 1, verse 5, what did God do then because of their rejecting and rebelling against him? Here's what he did. Verse 5, Isaiah 1, 5. Why should you be stricken any more? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick, and the whole heart faint. From the sole of the foot, even under the head, there's no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. So what was God doing here? He was chastening them and telling them there's something wrong. And when God tells us there's something wrong, what is it called? Well, why do we use the rod on the children? Not because they've done right, but because they've done wrong. Why does God use the rod on men? Not because they've done right, but because they've done wrong. So men then need to consider, what wrong have I done? And we can ask the Lord about that. He's liable to answer. So he further describes what he's doing in his chastening in verse 7, Isaiah 1, 7. Your country is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire. Your land, strangers devour it in your presence. And it is desolate, as overthrown by strangers. So what's God doing? He's showing them there's something wrong. They need to wake up and listen. Verse 8, the daughter of Zion is left as a cottage in a vineyard. Who's doing it? God is. As a lodge in a garden of cucumbers, as a besieged city. There's nothing left. except the Lord of hosts had left us unto us a very small remnant, we should have been as Sodom and should have been like unto Gomorrah. So God is disciplining them or seeking to get them to pay attention. But what are they doing? They're not paying attention at all. They're doing their own will. So God continues then in verse 10 to speak to the ruler. And who are the rulers? Hear the word of the Lord, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear unto the law of our God, you people of Gomorrah. All right, so here the rulers then are causing his people to err in another scripture. And so he addresses the rulers. Isaiah 3, verse 9, what was Sodom's sin? He says, you're rulers of Sodom. Well, who are the Sodomites in this case? Israelites. So as far as God's concerned, he's seeing Sodomites here, not just Israelites. So Isaiah 3, verse 9, the show of their countenance does witness against them, and they declare their sin as Sodom. They hide it not. Woe unto their soul, for they have rewarded evil unto themselves. Was Sodom ashamed of their sin? Not at all. They were proud of their sin. What happened in 1 Corinthians 5? They were proud of this man living with his father's wife. What kind of people were this? They're like Sodom. They're boasting about their sin. So what does God do with people like that? Well, with Corinth, he wrote them a rebuke. And he was going to discipline them. They didn't listen to the rebuke. So here God is rebuking Israel and telling them there's something wrong. And I'm telling you they're wrong. And what's he tell his prophets? Declare unto Jerusalem, tell Judah their sins. Well, that's what he's doing here. So Israel was not ashamed of their sin. Do we have anybody like that today? We had some rulers here the last, I better not get into politics, but we did have some rulers that were not ashamed of their sin and sinned blatantly and more or less said, what can you do about it? And what could we do? We couldn't do anything. We just had to watch what was happening here with Isaiah. He was dealing with the same kind of people. Well, we have hope here, if the Lord wills. Turn to Ezekiel 16. He's dealing with this same people in Israel. Now, Ezekiel's in Babylon, but he's prophesying here about Judah and Jerusalem. Ezekiel 16, 48. As I live, saith the Lord God, Sodom thy sister hath not done, she nor her daughters, as thou hast done, thou and thy daughters. Now we have a different time period here. Isaiah was 756 to 685 or somewhere like that. This is about 100 years later. And Ezekiel now is prophesying concerning Israel that is not quite destroyed yet. Zedekiah is the king, and God is going to scatter them all over the world. So he says, behold, this was the iniquity of your sister Sodom. That was Judah at that time. Sorry, Israel at that time. Pride, fullness of bread, abundance of idleness was in her and in her daughters. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. And they were haughty and committed abomination before me. Therefore I took them away as I saw good. All right, let's look at that again. What was the problem with this Sodom? Pride. Of course, God opposes the proud. And they had fullness of bread. What's wrong with fullness of bread? Abundance of idleness. What's wrong with idleness? Who wants lazy people? These people are lazy. And he said, neither did they strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. So they weren't doing good and they were wasting time. So what's happening with our people today? Some are doing good. What about the majority? And what about wasting time? There are a lot of vanities in this world that are not eternal. And as far as God's concerned, anything not eternal is a vanity. So God is challenging Israel to think about eternal things. And what should we be thinking about? We should also be thinking about things that are going to last eternally. And if we help the poor, God says, I'll pay you back. I'll reward you for your goodness, for your gift. He says, he that gives to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will repay him his debt. Well, God will, and that'll be on Judgment Day, and that'll be the time we need to get our reward, because it'll be eternal. Right back in Isaiah 1, verse 11, remember he said they're seeking God daily. They delight to know his way. They want to know the paths of judgment and justice. And then he goes on to describe them in verse 11, Isaiah 1:11. To what purpose is the multitude of your sacrifices unto me, saith the Lord? I am full of the burnt offerings of rams and the fat of fed beasts, and I delight not in the blood of bullocks or of lambs or of he-goats. So what are they doing? Well, they're coming to the temple, and they're offering these sacrifices according to the law of Moses. But why is God not accepting them then? This is what God commanded. They're obeying what God commanded. Well, he goes on to tell us that they're not looking at God's purpose at all. They're looking to their own way. Psalms 40, verses 6 to 8. Did God delight in animals being sacrificed? Well, these animal sacrifices were a foreshadow of Christ's sacrifice. So it was necessary. But as far as the sacrifice is concerned, what did God actually think about it? Now, he liked their obedience. We find out why he's not accepting the Israelites' obedience in Isaiah's time. But nevertheless, Psalms 40, verse 6, sacrifice and offering thou didst not desire. Mine ears hast thou opened, and this is, of course, Jesus speaking in prophecy. Burnt offering and sin offering thou hast not required. Not of Jesus. Why? Well, he never sinned. Then said I, lo, I come in the volume of the book that is written of me. I delight to do thy will, O my God. Yea, thy law is within my heart. I delight to do thy will. Now, does that describe Israel in Isaiah's time? Not at all. They weren't concerned with the Creator. They weren't concerned with the Creator's purpose. They were concerned with what they could do to get God to help them. We're fasting, Lord, but you're not listening. You're not giving us what we asked for. And he'll go on to tell us why he's not giving them an answer to their fasting. Chapter of Isaiah again, verse 12. He asked them, they're coming to the temple, they're giving the sacrifice. Verse 12, when you come to appear before me, so they were coming to appear before God, who hath required this at your hand to tread my courts? Well, they could answer, well, you commanded us to do it. Well, he's saying, why are you here? Did the Israelites go to the court in God's temple for God's sake or their own sake? Were they really interested in pleasing God and doing God's will? Or were they all turned aside to their own way? So yes, they are religious. Yes, they are obeying these commands. Yes, they are. But why? In order to get God to serve them in their work. I better not give a personal example. All right, so in verse 13, bring no more vain oblations. Incense is an abomination unto me. The new moons and Sabbath, the calling of assemblies, I cannot away with it. It is iniquity, even the solemn meeting. And why would that be? Well, we keep reading. Your new moons and your appointed feasts my soul hates. They are a trouble to me. I'm weary to bear them. Well, he's commanded them to do it. Why would they be weary for him to bear them? Does God become weary because a man obeys the command of God? In this case, yes. The question is, are they really obeying God, or are they trying to get God to serve them? Verse 15, when you spread forth your hands, I will hide my eyes from you. Yea, when you make many prayers, I will not hear. Then he tells them what the problem is. Your hands are full of blood. So all this righteousness that they're doing, but then they're willingly shedding blood. So what does God think of murderers? if a man murders and he goes on, does all these sacrifices and does all these things to God and praises God, what did God think of the man? God's not going to accept that man. Murders are hated of God. So their hands were full of blood. Verse 16, wash you, make you clean, put away the evil of your doings from before my eyes. What are they doing? Shedding blood. Cease to do evil. What are they doing? Shedding blood. Verse 17, learn to do well. They're not helping the poor. Seek judgment. Well, they were seeking the sacrifices, the outward man, but what is judgment? What color is it? Judgment is what God says is good or what God says is bad. Judgment says something is good and something is better. Judgment says something is evil and something is worse. So they're not concerned with God's judgment. And what did he tell about the Pharisees? He said, you neglect judgment and mercy and faith. So they were just like the Israelites here in Isaiah's time. The Pharisees were. So verse 17, learn to do well, seek judgment, relieve the oppressed, judge the fatherless, plead for the widow. Note that the judges were condemned here. They're the ones not judging the fatherless and not pleading for the widow. So God then reasons with Israel. And this is why he's telling them their sin. Because he wants them to consider they're not doing all these things for God. They're doing them for themselves so they can get God to serve them. If you be willing and obedient. Notice that word obedient here. Well, they say we are obedient. Well, they're obedient to do these things to get God to serve them, but were they obedient to serve God and to please God? And that's the problem. If you are willing and obedient, you shall eat the good of the land. So does the Creator have a right for the citizens to obey him? And the answer is yes. They should live for the Creator. He's the owner. Verse 20, but if you refuse and rebel, you shall be devoured with the sword, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. So God gave Israel one more chance. And, of course, during Isaiah's time, he gave them several chances. So verse 21, how has the faithful city become a harlot? It was full of judgment, righteousness lodged in it, but now murderers. So when were all these people righteous in Jerusalem? Well, when was Jerusalem, when did Jerusalem become the Israelite possession? Not until David. Remember, David came up against Jerusalem, and Joab went up on the wall and opened the gates, and they came in and they destroyed the people in Jerusalem, and that's when they got Jerusalem as their possession. Not until then. Well, what kind of man was David? David was a man after God's own heart. How many times did he sin? Only in the time of Uriah the Hittite and Bathsheba. So what kind of obedience was there in that city when David was there? There was righteousness there with David. And what about Solomon? There was righteousness there with Solomon. And then what happened? Rehoboam took over, and then the other kings took over, and what did the people do? They turned to evil. And so in Isaiah's time now, he's telling them, your land is full of blood. They're murderers. And that's what he says right here in verse 21. Your silver, that's the good metal, has become dross, useless. Thy wine is mixed with water. So what good is it when the wine is mixed with water? It's going to cause them to get sick. So notice where the blame lies in verse 23. People are generally sheep. They generally follow the leaders. Well, that's what was happening here in Israel. Some were following Isaiah, but the major part were following the princes. Verse 23, thy princes are rebellious and companions of thieves. Everyone loves gifts and follows after reward. They judge not the fatherless, neither doth the cause of the widow come before them. Who does that sound like? I think we've seen a little bit of that of this in our own land, how many times in the last several years? Your princes are rebellious. What are they rebelling against? Well, they cause others to obey the law, but they themselves don't do it. Companions of thieves. Are they stealing? Everyone loves gifts. So how do these people, the ones who go and influence the politicians, what do they carry with them? They carry gifts. And they follow after rewards. And then what do they not do? They don't judge the fatherless. Well, anyone who's helpless is just like the fatherless. Neither doth the cause of the widow come unto them. And what's happened today or yesterday, all these people in January 6 are released, or supposed to be. And what's happening? We're seeing some righteous judgment coming, and someone looking after the fatherless and the poor. So in verse 24, Isaiah 1, verse 24, therefore saith the Lord of hosts, the mighty one of Israel, I will ease me of mine adversaries and avenge me of mine enemies. And I will turn my hand upon thee and purely purge away thy dross and take away all thy tin. So what is the dross and tin? Well, when you take this metal out of the earth, it's generally mixed with other metals and other impurities, and that's the dross. And the tin, of course, is one kind of dross. So what's wrong with the dross and the tin and gold and silver? There's no strength in that. But when they get rid of the impurities in gold, what happens? It becomes rather strong. What happens with silver when you take away the dross? It becomes stronger. And then what about iron when you take away the dross? It becomes very strong. So when would this prophecy here that he's telling now be fulfilled? The Lord says in verse 25, I will turn my hand upon thee and purely purge away thy dross and take away thy sin, thy tin. All right, he goes on to tell when that's going to happen, or what's going to happen when this does happen. I will restore thy judges as at the first, and thy counselors as at the beginning. Afterward thou shalt be called the city of righteousness, the faithful city. So when was Jerusalem ever called a city of righteousness and a faithful city? Jerusalem started out with the Jebusites, and they were all evil. They were Gentiles, evil people. Then David took over. It was a city of righteousness. David ruled, and he wouldn't even let liars in the city. He destroyed all these evil people very quickly. The faithful city, they were faithful to God's commandments, and they were doing these things, at least David was, doing all these things because he loved God. He was seeking to fulfill God's eternal purpose, and he did. So that was when David was there, and Solomon was the same way. Well, verse 27, he continues to describe this time when he's going to purely purge away the dross and take away all the tin. Zion shall be redeemed with judgment, and her converts with righteousness. So how do you redeem someone with judgment? Well, if you redeem somebody, where are they? They're trapped. They're not able to get free. And so you redeem somebody, how do you do it? Judgment. Well, how are men trapped with Satan today? Satan lies, and men believe their lies. Satan tells them these vanities are great and fun, and they believe all these lies. And then what happens when they get God's judgment? They say, well, these are vanities. I don't want them. These are evil. I don't want them. And so God then shows men what is good and what is bad. He shows them what's better and what is worse. And so he's redeeming them with judgment, and he's going to redeem her converts with righteousness. What is righteousness? What color is it? Righteousness is obeying laws. If you don't have any law, you can't have righteousness. And so how is he going to redeem these people? He's going to redeem them with his laws. men are going to begin to follow God's judgment and laws. When did that happen? Verse 27, Zion shall be redeemed. All right, the description here continues with physical Israel in Isaiah's time. In Isaiah 1, verse 28, the destruction of the transgressors of, and of the sinners shall be together. All right, he's told what he's going to do. Now he's come back to Israel. This is what I'm going to do with Israel. The destruction of the transgressors and of the sinners shall be together. And they that forsake the Lord shall be consumed. Well, how do we forsake the Lord? If we're not taking part in his purpose, his work, what are we? We're not with him. We've forsaken him. We're not doing his will. And he says, they that forsake the Lord shall be consumed. What do you say about the rebellious? They'll be consumed. So anyone that does not work with God in his eternal purpose, what's going to happen to them? God will consume them. So verse 29, and they shall be ashamed of the oaks which you have desired, and you shall be confounded for the gardens that you have chosen. Now notice verse 28, he's talking about they. Verse 29, he starts off talking about they, and then he ends up talking about you. So here, they is a general judgment. You is a specific judgment. So now he's applying this general pattern that he's described here in verses 21 to 27, or 28, and now he's applying it to Israel. The oaks which you have desired. What are the oak for? That's what they made their idols of. Why? Because it was good wood. It didn't rot as quickly. And you shall be confounded for the gardens that you have chosen. And why did they choose the gardens? Well, there are trees there for shade. And they could go and worship their idols and not be concerned with the brightness of the sun falling on their heads. And then he says in verse 30, and you shall be as an oak whose leaf fades, and as a garden that hath no water. So what happens when an oak leaf fades? The tree is dead. All right, what happens as a garden that hath no water? The garden dies. And the strong in verse 31 shall be as a tow, whatever that pronunciation is, and thy maker of it as a spark, and they shall both burn together, and none shall quench them. So what's God going to do with Israel here? He is going to destroy them. So he's got Isaiah there as his prophet to plead with the people. And God is pleading with the people. He's taking away all their possessions and all, so that they'll think they need to turn to God and live for God and not for themselves. They need to understand that God has created this world for himself and for his purpose and not for theirs. And what is his purpose? David was a man after God's own heart. Was that God's purpose? Noah was righteous. He followed the laws of God. Is that God's purpose? What's God's purpose? To make men who will obey God so he can take them to be with him in heaven. Does he want in heaven a lot of people wasting their time and playing and doing their own thing in their own world and not God's? No, he doesn't want people like that up there. So what's he doing? Very patiently working with men here on earth and right now with Israel, trying to get them to turn, saying, I created you for my purpose. I want you to obey my laws so I can take you to heaven with me. Tonight we'll offer the invitation for, I guess no one's coming in yet, but they all come in. All right, Brother Samuel, you have the prayer tonight, right? Okay. And Dave, what number are you? 345. 345. I I think most of us know the announcements. Are there any new announcements that we need to make? Slight update on Alex. Seems like he's being protected right now. His family's with somebody else now, so they can't be found. And Alex is at least protected somehow. I understand he's in a judge's house, which is very rare. So the Lord's looking after him, if that's true. And some say he's in the police station, but nevertheless, as long as he's in the police station, the others can't get him. Another update that I had, and don't know if anybody else had this, but these were not 20 young men that attacked them. It was several women that attacked them. And we'll try and find out the truth of it. But that's a rarity if you have women attacking people. And what would be the reason for that? This is getting thicker instead of thinner. Not understanding what's actually happening, but at least we understand Alex is safe now and his family is safe. All right, what was the number again, Dave? 345. If you're subject to the Lord's invitation that you would desire to fulfill His purpose and do His will, in the first gospel sermon, Peter stood up, and when the Jews said, "Men and brethren, what shall we do?" Peter answered. He said, "Why, repent and be baptized, every one of you, in the name of Jesus Christ, for the remission of your sins." Then he says, "The promise is to you and to your children, and all that are far off, as many as the Lord our God shall call." So if you're subject to the Lord's invitation tonight to repent and be buried with him in the waters of baptism, to rise to walk in a new life, to wash away your sins in his blood, or if you need the prayers of the church, we would ask you to come now while we stand together and sing.